Hello.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. This is Teresa Dietze and David Franco, or David Franco and Teresa Dietze at with Practical Work on Self. This is our 17th group discussion. Tonight we will be going into our conversation about the red-faced donkey and then moving on into the chapter Chief Weakness.
Okay. Slick. What do I do now?
You
You see
start the
the
class as per usual. In the meantime, I will read the header for the chapter. Since
Oh, okay.
we have much, oh, excuse me, was that the red-faced donkey that I just noticed? We have
Someone
much,
picture. Go
pardon me?
ahead, you're up.
We have much to gain from manifesting without considering, without fear for self, without desire to protect our vanity and self-love. We must free ourselves from the opinion of others.
Before we get really into the chapter, I wanted to actually discuss something that's gone on in me. It's been 2 weeks since we've been working together, and our assignment was to get into the red-faced donkey. But during that time, I've kind of had a breakthrough, and I wanted to share it with everybody. I've done a lot of work over the last 2 weeks on getting a better understanding of the cleaning products that I use at home, and I'm studying a fair amount now, and I mean it's really opened up a lot for me. Like there are particular cleansers that I work with in cleaning the sink and so on, and then there's a whole set of spray products that I'm studying for cleaning the various counters and whatnot. And you wouldn't believe what a study this is. And once you get into it, there's a lot to learn. And it's just something that all of us should consider with a lot more attention. I haven't really explored the entire region. Like when you get down to the floor area, there's the whole problem of carpeted and not carpeted and how you deal with cleaning products associated with both of those issues. Now, and no, I haven't addressed the idea of cleaning products and how they relate to windows, but let's just say that's on my to-do list here. But I just thought it was something that I wanted to bring up, I wanted to share with you, and I'm open, you can, there's a lot I can share about it, that's all. So and I hope that doesn't take away from the class at all, but it was something that I thought I wanted to share with everybody.
Well, Mr. Clean, thanks you.
Yes, I've certainly considered that too. Sherry's very proud of me, and that's important to me too.
May
Yes, please.
I? I tell you, I cannot tell you how much this chapter spoke to me because in my own ways, I have for the issues of vanity and self-love and importance, I have somehow worked in my own ways. So the chapter really has an alarm. It talks about so many things that are very resonant to me. But I could not follow in the chapter 132, pretty much the last paragraph. It says we could make trivial opinions, relationship, for instance, our associates' pecking order, diets, routine, speed, or tempo of work, our attachment to various social activities, and so on. And I could not, I mean, I know what he's talking about. I know his aim in the exercise. He's
Tell me what you
referring
think
to me.
that aim, Guillermo.
But I Sorry?
Tell me what you think that aim is.
I is to make ourselves vulnerable, to make my personality vulnerable and to face that protection that usually my self-love is my self-importance, and that soft spot that we have, if you want to call it egos too, my psychological aggregates. And for me, the exercise speaks to that, but at the same time, it's not only aiming to vanity or your self-importance, it is to the routines that we do have. Because, for instance, what kind of a problem will you have your vanity working with two eggs in your pants? Or what kind of a challenge to your vanity will be to every time you cross a door, do it with your left foot or right? So it does have a phase that is aiming to your self-importance, and there is another phase that has to do with your routines. So you choose the kind of exercise you want to do.
Yeah, so it's not, you don't pick an exercise of something that you already do. I mean, as in fact, we all are red-faced donkeys. We just don't believe it and we don't see it. But it would be, in a sense, something that goes against your own personal current. For instance, let's say you, it's important for you to dress meticulously, with, you know, with great care, and you want everybody to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So a challenge would be you get up in the morning, you dress exactly like you do, and then you spill a little mustard on your shirt.
Okay, all right.
And then
there
you go to work like that.
Okay, how about opinions? How would you trivialize your opinions? What I do, in my case, I have done it before without knowing this, I just try to hold on into my opinions. Every time I want to talk or I want to express my opinion, I just hold it back and I just shut up. You know.
That doesn't necessarily make you look like a red-faced donkey. It may make you look less like a red-faced donkey.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. So how you would use maybe opinions or attachments, maybe negative feelings, in it. If you could design an exercise for me that, like you just did, that was very, very clear.
Well, for instance, next time you're in a political conversation in the city of Toronto with your friends,
mm-hmm.
then what you could do is, without hesitation, support everything that the United States is doing. And
oh, gosh, that's a tough.
And just without batting an eyelash, talk of the great gifts that the United States has given and helped Canada, how it's helped further the world process as it is now, and just go on and on and on about that. I mean, you have to stop at a certain point because you don't want, you have to protect your own personal safety, but.
And you're not supposed to harm others either.
Okay, and how about my feelings? Should I believe that, or are the words of an actor?
You're just messing with yourself, Guillermo. It's designed
right.
To mess with you.
Good, well put.
Okay, but should I? I mean, I can't say that with no problem, but it will be just the words of an actor. Like I'm reading a script. I don't mind to do that. But should I feel that? Do but I defend the states?
So
in a way, I could doubt, although I have a thousand ways of criticizing the politics of the United States, I might be wrong. Really, I'm being honest. My perception is limited. I cannot understand really the whole world. So there may be a real point that I am wrong.
That's my
so the matter of the
okay.
exercise, I have to just be an actor.
Well, if you actually
go ahead,
please.
My problem is that I am looking at you on the screen, and so when I do that, then you don't look like you're about to say something because of that 4-second gap. So it's not as much about acting as it is just about just about taking that on. You don't necessarily have to try to convince somebody. It's just more about, see, even an actor can do some self-considering and begin to consider how they appear to others and take the cues from the way that they appear to others. And there can be some vanity and self-love in that. So this exercise is more about freeing ourselves from the opinions of others, which is a segue into a conversation that I already opened online, and I would like to read the comments. So I wrote initially, "Ahoy, fellow donkeys. What does it mean to free ourselves from the opinions of others?" And Silverdale said, "Testing 1, 2, 3. Oops, hee-haw." So a Townsend girl said, "It means being pirates in this life. Grin." And Silverdale said, "When the essential self is our functioning center of gravity, we are free of the opinions of others because the essential self is all-embracing without differentiation." Then Townsie Girl said, "I was wondering about the comment in the donkey chapter about feeling further away from the rest of humanity. I had thought that with the awakening and expansion, we would in some ways feel closer." Then Silverdale said, "As the essence of self grows and develops, it recognizes how asleep the rest of humanity is. This produces a feeling of separation, not unity." Now, I would like to take that up and make my own comment at that point and say that in this work, as I understand it, and I could be wrong, and Silverdale, feel free to correct me, I believe that we need to be able to differentiate the different forces and to begin to recognize the different parts of ourselves in advance of being able to effectively blend them. And in doing,
what do you mean by blend them?
By blend them, I mean bringing them together to synthesize them into that third force that Silverdale often talks about. So in the process of becoming even painfully clear and aware of the sleeping machine, ourselves and that of others, we can go through a very intense experience of being separate, and then the non-phenomenal self or the other parts of ourselves, we begin to feel more unified through that part. And like good sorcerers, we're bringing together the tensions of those opposites. And as we do that, we begin to create the third force. Now, I'll refer back to Silverdale and ask if I'm somewhere on track with this.
Teresa, I think you've expressed it very well. I'll throw you all another curveball. See if you can swing and hit this one. Look, one of our forces, which I call our historical personality, develops a very clear sense of self. What this particular book, Practical Work on Self, is attempting to do is to help each of us grow and develop this second force, which is diametrically opposite. And you know, I wrote a comment, Teresa, you know, on tonight's on the Red Donkey log, which states more or less what I'm about to say.
Would you like me to read it?
Well, if it's convenient to read it now,
that
will help.
Let's let him go on. It's a long post.
I wasn't going to read all of it, but
yeah,
go ahead.
Bang on. You're right on what you're saying, though, George. Go ahead.
Well, so in any event, listen. I'm throwing a curveball, so be careful as you swing. The non-phenomenal self of a woman
is entirely male in all of its characteristics. And, by extension, the non-phenomenal part of a man is entirely female in its characteristics. If you can just imagine living with that kind of a situation. And it's when, so what we're trying to do in this course is to wake, is to develop our non-phenomenal self. The way a man does it is by studying how a woman thinks and behaves and acts, and realize that's more or less what his non-phenomenal self is doing, even if he never acknowledges it because he's so identified with his own gender as a man, and vice versa for a woman in general. The reason that's important is because when we talk about being a red-faced donkey, what we're attempting to do in the process of strengthening our non-phenomenal self, which we're not that familiar with, is give it an opportunity, like a parent watching a child, to do things that we might know are socially inappropriate, but which give that independent force an opportunity to grow under the guidance or the supervision of the parent, which is the historical personality. Once that non-phenomenal self has matured and grown to a certain point, then you would know how to instinctively blend those two opposite forces together to create your own child, which is your own independent you or your own beingness, which is a very high level of being, you know, of achieving what all this work is all about. That's my opinion.
Okay, let's rewind a little bit.
That really quick insertion. It's just that this is very consonant with Jung's postulation of the anima and the animus as being
great.
The internal male, the internal male for the female being the animus, and the internal female of the man being the anima.
Okay, so when you are performing the red-faced donkey exercise, let's break it apart and let's just see what's actually happening there. Now, we've only had one person even mention what they did, or a couple of people have demonstrated what they did for red-faced donkey. But maybe someone else can say what they did, and then I'd like to parse it and see if we can, in a pragmatic sense, come to the understanding that George is offering at the moment.
Excellent.
And that we see in the chapter. So does anybody else have an example of how they've worked with this during the last 2 weeks?
May I?
Go ahead.
The exercise that I did is. Do you know that in Canada we have a public care health care system?
Yes.
And I was in a serious conversation. I was advertising that prostitution should be covered in our health care system. And they were shocked.
Okay, so that would be an example.
But then it didn't work because they laughed at it so much. And say, oh, that's funny, but I guess they never believed.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't quite ring. Mike, are you there?
Yeah.
Any thoughts on this?
I didn't do a whole lot of things, but what came to my mind was it's kind of a voluntary allowing yourself to be seen in a way that you don't want to be seen. In other words, allowing yourself to be seen like you don't want to be seen. Like, I don't like to be seen as clumsy and inept or frozen by fear or incompetent or wrong or a fool or inadequate, you know. So I just let myself ease into that when it presented itself. I didn't do a whole lot of that, but I did ask myself that, just that natural, what was it that would voluntarily allow me to be seen in a way that I don't want to be seen. In other words, like I said, just a simple thing is not being able to, you know, do something simple or whatever, inadequate or inept or incompetent even.
And anybody else then? Anybody else give a try here on an actual exercise with friends, family, associates?
I'll throw something out.
Okay.
I didn't do the exercise the way that we've talked about it. I'll admit that. But I will also admit I'm starting to get a sense of how much a red-faced donkey I really am. I got in contact with an aspect of my historical personality in the last 2 weeks. I'm working on actually two particular aspects, one having to do with my sister and how I relate to women, one having to do with how I relate to men. And it is kind of fascinating. I liked your opening comment, David, about we are all red-faced donkeys, and I'm just now starting to get a sense of how much I've been working to fool myself and others. So that's kind of where I am with this lesson.
Thank you for that. Now, these chapters, for a lot of us, we're reading this material for the first time, and we're getting introduced to a complex, really, in a certain way, a complex philosophy that we haven't had a chance to digest. Even the very fundamental concept of that we are a sleeping machine, in a sense, housing this essential self, and that these two are interplaying in a certain way in this one entity is so strange to think of. It's so strange to put yourself in that position. But fundamental to many of the chapters that are here is intentionality. The intention to set out and do something, in a sense, against grain. For instance, when I opened up and I started talking about cleaning products, I mean, at first, you know, the first few sentences are, you know, were kind of just a joke in a certain way. But then to continue to talk like that and actually buy into the interest in cleaning products and sit there in front of these two cameras that are staring at me and having all these astute individuals listening to me, something started happening. I started to be publicly, in a sense of public humiliation. All right? So to purposely take that on, and that certainly was a good way to do it. That was an example of making something that's trivial very important. And I mean, we all have friends that do stuff like that, right? They buy a static cling remover and so on and so forth. But it's like, so when you take that on, what's happening then? What do you suppose was happening in my the sleeping machine part of me and the ego and how it works on that half of the playing field? Thoughts?
Squirming.
Say it again.
Squirming.
Squirming. So what was squirming?
The part that wants to look good.
Well, the part that wants to look good, like I, or when I say I, when the sleeping machine calls, looks good. It's how I, that whole set of dramas, expects and wants to be seen. So during that brief period of time, I suspended that.
Silverdale says, "We still love you, David, even if you feel humiliated moderating these conversations." As Chelsea Kroll said, you had that tension feeling that the machine resists, the machine and the ego.
Yeah, so look at what happens when we place ourselves in an example of that, of being in the position of raising the high flag on cleaning products. It's like suddenly we're all out of sorts. I mean, who would be talking about such a thing? And so the ego of in a certain way, the ego of stability that the historical personality thrives on was not able to achieve its goal at that moment. It couldn't reestablish itself, right? So what happened? Where was I? So we know a little bit about what was happening with the historical personality. Squirming, humiliation, bad image.
It was being stressed.
It was very much being stressed. So we can consciously stress it in really ways that are very safe, but nevertheless stretch that. And what else is being exercised at that time? Anybody?
Khufu said it's a conscious, deliberate way of confronting one of the barriers in our path to awakening the machine, touching it, becoming familiar with it.
Okay. Exactly. And you do things like that, and you see subtleties about the way that the machine operates that you don't normally get a chance to see.
Khufu also said before that, after using this exercise for some time now, one of the things I observe is how useful it is to catch the thread again. I can see me emerging from a given conversation, having moments before believed what I was engaging in, and also see really how, and then he got cut off. And we had one more comment, Townsend Girl's comment. I'd like to read that, David, unless it's a poor timing
no.
for you. Okay.
No, good timing.
All right. Townsend Girl said, I found this exercise interesting. I was wondering what would I do. I do tend to randomly wear bunny ears to work. So what do I do? A thought occurred to me that I get concerned over my armpit hair. Living in Arizona, staying cool is an ongoing battle. It was interesting how difficult it was to do this. So what if someone thinks I'm icky on such a superficial issue? How silly that I worry that much over such trivia. How does one waken when you're filled with such trivia? And just a minute, there's another comment that I've been holding for her on there. She also said, my exercise, I work in an office space with a lot of very conservative married straight women. As a dyke, I had thought it would not be hard. Boy, was I wrong. I had a real hard time doing that. And then she said, I was so very self-conscious and was worried about what they thought and or what they would think. And then let's see. And then Sin Hogg said, yes, I can understand the difficulty you must have in the office. People can be mean.
Yeah, so that, in a kind of global sense, Townsend Girl, puts you in a situation of being in as a red-faced donkey. That, in a general way, because you're kind of going against type, being in an office environment like that. And don't forget, we're not working here, we're not attempting to work directly with psychology. That does come up, and it has its place. But for instance, for you, it might be, you had once said that you dress a little bit flamboyantly, I think, one or two classes ago. What if you dressed absolutely conservatively?
Like a young lawyer?
Like a young lawyer, and you had your hair in a young lawyer hair thingy. You came in with your brief, exactly as conservative as you could muster it up.
Nail polish?
Don't break a smile. Don't even say anything. You don't laugh about it. You don't pretend that you're in costume. You just hold that posture. That would be an example of how to create that strange tension. But I didn't get, you know, if anybody else wants to bring up their thing, we could maybe help come up with exercise. But I still had my question, so what else is happening with, so I'm squirming, I'm uncomfortable, my image is challenged. Anything else?
I'm not seeing any comments, but my sense of it is that you're leaning into the non-phenomenal self with a little more elbow.
Don't forget what we're working with here is intentionality and attempting to grow a being. And there's this beautiful phrase, you know, on page 132. I think it's that. Oh, no, I think it's in the next chapter. Yeah. But it's we're working on developing the non-phenomenal self, our essential self, and bringing it to life. And we're doing things that, and so you go against trend, right? And this was just a practical way of doing that and creating the tension and the interplay between these two things, these two electrical beings that are housed in one body, as a sense. So and yes, the essential self, the non-phenomenal self, is out. It's strengthened at that time. It's strengthened through the effort of the intentionality of going against type.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Please, no, go ahead. I'm done.
I'd like to suggest a practice that I've done before. It started out when I was working one-on-one with a spiritual teacher, and he used to do various things to me, like taking me. I was on silence for like 3 months during this period, and he would like take me to a beauty shop and decide to tell them how to cut my hair. Or he would take me, one time he took me into Nordstrom's and he would tell me to put on different clothes. I was in the dressing room and he would bring in different things and have me put them on and come out, and there was another person with him, and see what I look like in them. And he would do things like dress me as a young lawyer or put me in something that was really flamboyant, and he would tell me that if I had really big resistance to any particular thing, then I was going to have to buy it. So I would be in there and just surrendering as much as I possibly could and becoming indifferent to what my appearance was, and trying on the different appearances and allowing myself to get into them if I possibly could with different facets of myself, because I really didn't want to have to buy them. So after a while, I got into a place of real comfort and indifference, and then the exercise was over. Now, this is a practice that I sometimes repeat when I feel rigid in my identity and I feel like I have to be a certain way or look a certain way. Sometimes I'll go and try a few things on in a dressing room that don't have anything at all to do with my preferences or my personality. Now, I lucked out in that exercise with teacher because none of the things looked even remotely like they were right for me, or they didn't fit that I didn't identify with anyways. I didn't have to buy anything. But
so if somebody was to come up to or come to where you live and took you to a hair salon and said to the attendant how to cut your hair, that would be okay with you?
It would depend who they were and whether I was. At that point in time, I wasn't working. But there have been some points where I've allowed people to make that decision. For the most part, you know, I'm into my ego like the rest of us, and for me, I don't really want to show up very much, and I don't want, also don't, I'm practical, I don't want something I have to maintain. But under that set of circumstances, I wasn't concerning myself with those things, so it was easier than it is in everyday life. What I'm suggesting is that for people who feel very rigid about their image, and I know in this group tonight we have one person who's one way and another person who's diametrically the opposite in terms of how they like to present, it would be perhaps an enlightening or freeing experience to go to a store and begin trying on some clothes that you wouldn't be caught dead in. There's something kind of relieving about it. It's sort of shocking or feels disjointing at first, but then after you do it for a while, you become more comfortable and you feel freer.
Well, I have a question then about that. I appreciate you bringing up the story. Because I was thinking if I had to go out and be different or do something different that is completely opposite of who I am, I think I would then, you know, in dealing with the tension, that I would move to indifference as a way to protect myself. And
yeah.
So that's what I was wondering is, isn't that just another part of our
yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the question is, how long can you stay open before you begin to protect yourself, and how fast does that kick in? And it's an exercise for self-observation. And the better part of the exercise was really actually trying it on to see if maybe I could stretch into those different places. But once I found a way to just surrender in order to avoid it, then you're right, then I was back into my more into my hysterical personality.
Who was that that made the comment?
That was Susan Nevesky.
Great comment, Susan. And it's an example, I think, just of the fact that our historical personality, the sleeping machine, is so clever. It's so clever. It's virtually infinite in its ability to maintain. Think of it in terms of just self-survival. It will do everything it can to not be disrupted. It will do everything it can in the most subtle ways. And if as soon as we have the freedom, enough freedom to observe ourselves a teeny bit in a objective manner, and you begin to see such things, you're in awe of its ability to reform in almost any circumstance.
I'd like to point out really quick, hold your comment and remember it, because I'd let me come right back to you. I'd just like to point out that that's the same facility of ego that allows people who are seriously abused to identify with their abusers and to begin to be completely compliant or to do the things to themselves that the abusers do to them. That's an extreme example, but it shows how far when David says almost anything. Susan, what were you about to say?
I see how my body wants to go into equilibrium. And so if I pushed myself out, it's going to find a way to bring it back in. And so then maybe what I'm hearing is that as I push it out and notice the struggle and the creativity in the way it brings me back. And that's if I can notice it.
That's your challenge. That creativity is, in a sense, what you're, to put it in a certain way, in a certain context, that's what you're up against.
Oh, my gosh, it is, just amazes me how challenging and how difficult. I mean, I keep talking or noticing about how I'm just on automatic pilot. And I try and to be conscious, and I can hold that for just a short bit, and all of a sudden I'm unconscious again.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Very
amazing.
Nice. I really want to encourage people to get a copy of Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus.
And in fact, I did, and I'm reading it. I also read In Search of the Miraculous, and it was just fascinating to read that, and also going through practical work on self, because it's like, oh, that's what that means. Oh, that's what that means.
Good.
But I know I only grasp a certain portion of it. There's much more, especially after I've heard Silverdale talk about it, and it's like, oh, I didn't get that part. And I do have a question. It's going back just a little bit, but when we did the doorway exercise, there were times when I did consciously remember, and when I walked through, I would feel a tingling. And sometimes I notice that I get this tingling, and it's kind of like up my spine, around my spine, and I'm just wondering, is that maybe my non-phenomenal self communicating? Hi?
I don't want to posit that your non-phenomenal self is in your spine or movement of that in that manner. It sounds like there was a movement, clearly a movement of a different kind of energy at that moment. And it's possible that that was what I call a sign of transit, a sign of like the moment of awakening. We talk about being awake, being asleep, sleeping machine, non-phenomenal self, but there's an interplay when our attention works in different ways, and we're in a different place. Sometimes we can notice we're in a different place after we've gotten there. For instance, right now, we can notice that we're kind of in a different place than we were before we came to this class, right?
Right.
And we can note that. But where was the transition? How did we get from there to here? What car did I drive to get there? So when you do something as discreet as the doorway exercise, sometimes it's kind of like honed down into moments. And I find the moments of transition just fascinating. Just fascinating. So thanks for bringing that up.
I'm thinking that feeling of tingling is very similar to what I experience when there's another spirit in the room. When I'm working with a client and when a deceased relative steps in or something like that, And I think a lot of those sensations like that in the body can sometimes be a physical cue that represents some kind of guidance that something additional is present if we pay attention. And it could be our non-phenomenal self to some extent. I wouldn't say it's necessarily a direct experience of the non-phenomenal self, but it could be a little cue from the body that you're in the presence of something subtle.
Keep working at it, and then if you would please report back to us and see how those doorways illuminate as you go through them.
Okay. Well, I also have another question. In this chapter, Red Faced Donkey, on page 134, it's very last paragraph.
Yep.
It says, this exercise of intentional humiliation, along with the repair of the heart. What does he mean by along with the repair of the heart?
And continue to read.
Along with the repair of the heart, by following the moving manifestations of the machine during manual labor and the ascension onto the cross, the intersection of time and space, by contemplation upon and psycho-emotional identification with the sensations and emotions of the man on the cross is the Western monk's great secret.
So I heard three different things.
It's all one sentence.
Yeah. So dare to manifest without the fear of humiliation, repair of the heart, and something called ascension onto the cross. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Repair of the heart by following the moving manifestations of the machine during manual labor. Is that chapter one of HBM? No, I can't remember. Silverdale, are you going to help out here?
Well, you know, and I'm struggling myself to understand exactly what this means myself. You know, this was not in the original 1979 edition. This was added, you know, by the editor. It would take me a while, David, to really sort through exactly what's. I can understand some of what's implied here, but. Not for what we're talking about tonight.
Yeah. Can you hold that as a question and let it? Let's see
what,
if it.
Could I ask a question? What is the question?
What is repair of the heart?
What is repair of the heart?
Yes.
You know, for myself, if I were to try and just take a stab in the dark at what I think that is referring to within the context of a whole teaching, what it's referring to is to be aware of your non-phenomenal self at all times in the midst of whatever activity your historical personality is experiencing at the moment. From when you first wake up to when you go to sleep at night, your physical body is doing something. It's always in constant motion. Now the question is can you feel or sense your non-phenomenal self as a second force within that moving machine? If you can, you are repairing your heart. So, you know, you can't take the word heart literally. You take it more in a figurative sense of the heart is your awareness of your non-phenomenal self of course, initially when we start all of this, we have no comprehension at all of what that might even be like. But as we work on self and grow our non-phenomenal self, then we become more cognizant of our non-phenomenal self as a part of our machine. That is repairing the heart. And then that leads to the to ascension on the cross and identification with the man on the cross, and that would certainly be the Western monk's greatest secret, because you're now on the cross between the absolute, the uncreated absolute, and his creation below.
Yeah, the manifestation, and it's being in that. That's being on the cross. That's a bit down the road.
I'd like to make a link, if it's possible, to make it a little more practical.
Yeah.
I would think that the link here could be that when we're able to stay present with ourselves, one way of saying it, to stay with our form, our body, and stay with the non-phenomenal self at the same time, something akin to compassion is present, because the non-phenomenal self isn't in judgment of the phenomenal self. And then we have a part of ourself there present that isn't in judgment, and that allows us to be more. And in that being, that could be a link to the heart. And with the cross, we're on one hand, the horizontal bar symbolizes matter and being in matter and the material plane, and here we are in this body. And the upright bar symbolizes ascension, or the spirit of ascension into spirit, and that would be the non-phenomenal self. So when we're bringing those two together, then there's either a conflict like the Battle of the Sorcerers, or a confluence, a blending in making that third force, and maybe both, and maybe those things both create the awareness that allows us to transform. Who's sighing
or,
loudly? Go ahead.
Yes. I guess.
For our part, one thing we can do from this is this idea of getting a sense what it feels like when we're in the essential self. What does that feel like? What do we sense? Do you have a sense of that when you successfully walk through a doorway, when you awaken the machine, as is said? Do you have a sense of what you're like in that position? And the more you do it, the more you practice that, in a sense, you hold that in your hand, because then when you're in more of a sleeping state, you can bring that out, and it becomes a reminder. And sometimes even the act of falling asleep and the characteristic becomes so different to you that it puts you into a state of awakening. The sleep state itself reminds you to awaken yourself. But so we can practice in small ways until we have a sense of what that's like. What's it like to hang out there for a while?
So
possible to do.
We have a few comments. Do you want, you can go on if you're not. Okay. So, Townsend Girl, so when we do not have to fight to be awake, that is the monk's secret? And Silver,
no.
Yeah, we'll come back to that just a second. Silverdale, we struggle to become aware of our essential self, which begins to awaken the machine. What were you going to say, David?
Well, the monk's secret is a triad. It's a triad of work. you are always, as long as we're in physical manifestation of a body, we will always be struggling with its sleep characteristics. When you get to a certain place, it winds up being a different process. Then you work with preserving, in a sense, preserving the waking state, hanging out in the idea of being awakening. Now, the man on the cross literature, I'm sure I don't understand it, but it does have to do with the tension of being in the non-manifest and then the manifest. It's the pulling apart of the absolute into parts, into two parts, and sensing that. And we talked about that, I think, a little bit when we talked about this yearning, this idea of yearning. But anyway, I'm sorry, you had other comments on the chat?
Well, Khufu said, when it fades like that, I'm not sure what that reference is, at least you can apprehend the necessity to repair the heart. That might be all the information you have to work with, which is a good point.
And it may be all you need.
And Silverdale, well spoken, David, regarding the man on the cross.
So we have, and I'm going to say this, I'll say it every time I do any of these classes, our understanding of the material is like a spiral. We keep going around and around the same material, and ever so gradually, we see it in a little bit bigger perspective and a little bit bigger, and eventually we see it in maybe a more objective manner in which it might be known. But for the moment, it's like, what can we do today with what we have? So how, just the fact that we're here today, each and every one of us in this class, is that's something. That's what we could do. That's what I could do today. And I think we're getting ready to do a tape change on this end, TD.
Good timing to do that here, too.
And I'll save my comments on cleaning products and tying that up for another night, because it's not time on this particular tape.